From 90.7 WFAE Charlotte, 90.3 WFHE Hickory, welcome to Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. There have been countless tales told of the sports-loving father infecting his son or sons with the fanaticism that has consumed and brought unbridled joy to his life, and hopefully will do the same for their lives. But our guest today has some tales to be told about raising two very athletic daughters and how sports have improved their approach to life. Robert Strauss is author of the book Daddy's Little Goalie. He has a long background as a sports writer with a stint at Sports Illustrated and some of his work appearing in the New York Times. He's currently adjunct professor of writing at the University of Pennsylvania and lives with his wife and those two daughters in Haddonfield, New Jersey. Robert Strauss, welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Should clarify that one daughter, the oldest, Ella, has just finished up her freshman year at Davidson College north of Charlotte. And you're on a book tour of the Carolinas to promote Daddy's Little Girl.
Daddy's Little Goalie, yes, that's true.
A Daddy's Little Goalie.
I know. It's a play on words, I guess, and they liked it, so I was happy to use it.
So what was part of the was that part of the reason for writing it, though, that because no one else had? Every other book had dealt with the dad and the sons?
Right. A writer friend of mine had suggested it, and I said, well, that book has to be written. He says, well, even if it has, it hasn't done by you. I think he was sort of either tired or enamored of my stories about my kids playing sports, which were mostly funny, I have to say.
And in fact, the girls were somewhat reluctant and quite frankly afraid that you were going to embarrass them in that book.
Of course, of course. I mean, what father worth his salt won't embarrass his kids, you know?
So did you?
I don't think so. Well, let's put it this way. Yes, in a small sense. But no major embarrassments. Mostly
right.
They're like goofy tales of our times that you're slightly embarrassed about, but not really.
You approached this whole subject of girls in sports with a bit of a bias, didn't you?
Yeah, I was, I played sports in high school and college, but I was sort of a marginal guy. I mean, yeah, I guess you have to be good enough to make a college team, but I was perhaps the worst athlete in NCAA history. I played freshman basketball. That's when the freshmen were not allowed to play varsity. I played freshman basketball at Division III school, Carleton College in Minnesota, for a team that did not win a game all season, and I played only 5 minutes for that team and had only the last assist of the season so that we were not doubled by our opponents. We only lost 105-53 because of my pass to my friend under the basket at the last seconds. So yeah, it came from being a guy and, you know, suddenly having daughters and suddenly realizing that they might like to do the same thing.
But the bias was not that surprising. Most of the guys growing up in the 50s and the 60s had that bias.
Right. I also think, you know, I've been since the book and since I've been on tour and been interviewed and all that, I've realized that how did the girls who did play in high school, how did they get started? I should go back and ask them, because there was Little League. Girls didn't play Little League. There was miniature football. Girls didn't do that. I never played with a girl in any of the sandlot kinds of games or wire ball even or wiffle ball. So when they got to high school, they were obviously playing. Other than swimming, I don't know where they got started. So they must have had dads that did it off on the side of the road somewhere.
This is not without precedent, though, even during World War II, as we learned from A League of Their Own, that women were involved in sports and even at a professional level.
Right.
But it just didn't catch on. It didn't stay. It had no staying power, for example.
Right. But now the difference is when the clarion call goes out in the suburbs or I'm sure in the inner cities, and certainly rural areas at about 5 years old, that there's this bitty basketball or soccer or t-ball, everybody comes out. So there's no sort of prejudice against boys and girls. Now kids can drop off, but at 5 years old, girls are playing something, doing something. So they continue on doing it.
Did you write this to convince others, though, of the benefits about encouraging young ladies girls to participate in sports? And accordingly, do others need convincing still?
I don't think they need that. And that's sort of not the point so much. But sort of it isn't so much that I think the way I did it was the only way, but I think that doing my point here is doing it with humor, doing it with being sanguine about it, being realizing that being on the A team isn't everything. Yeah, it's great if your kid's good, that's fine, but and sort of trying to stay out of it as much as possible. I like to say that I was omnipresent and unobtrusive at the same time.
Are the parents' conduct any different when their daughters are playing, when the dad's daughters are playing, versus when the dad's sons are playing?
Not that I can tell, but of course I don't go to as many youth male sporting events. I mean, I do go to the football games, you know, in the high school, but that's sort of a mass social event that's different than probably every other sport. Maybe basketball would be that way.
Other than the obvious, why is it different for dads and their daughters versus dads and their sons?
Well, I like to say that when dads of sons, whether they're 5 years old or 25 years old, have the opportunity to see their kid on a gum sugar-infested trading card or being able to play before 65,000 drunken alumni, and girls will never have that opportunity. And you know, so the maybe the ultimate thing there is the scholarship, or maybe they could make the Olympics. But the sort of money and fame overlay that parents have in their dreams above them, in that sort of little cartoon balloon, that's where it changes for boys.
There are some moments, however, that now can act sort of as a testament to women's sports. Brandi Chastain ripping off her jersey in a women's soccer championship game, anything involving Danica Patrick, for example, the 1996 Olympics, 80,000 fans turning out to see the women's soccer team compete, Mia Hamm and those folks. So that is a testament that there has been somewhat of a profound turnaround.
Right. But I would bet you still out there when you said Brandi Chastain, you know, 80% of the people had to be reminded of what she had done. Yet every day, you know, Dirk Nowitzki, even, you know, from Dallas, he's not even from anywhere around here. They probably know who he is. But, Derek Jeter, whoever else you can put out there among male athletes is still more prevalent.
Let's back to the book, which, again, the title of is Daddy's Little Goalie. What were the circumstances of your epiphany, if you will, or your awakening that girls on the playing field is just as beneficial as it is to the boys?
Well, I was sitting watching a 76ers game. I'm from Philadelphia, on the tube, and it was just a mindless sitting there. And 5-year-old Ella comes up and snuggles over to me like 5-year-old girls do to their dads when they got a moment to be with them. And we're watching, and I'm sort of have my arm around her, and suddenly she asked me one of those typical 5-year-old questions. It's Daddy, why do only boys play sports? And it's like I jumped up, I sort of knocked her over to the floor, and I said, girls must play sports, you know? Where do we find that out?
Right.
Yeah.
And your next move?
Well, I went to the, you know, she fell asleep, you know, not caring about my answer, and I ripped through the newspaper in the morning, and I found that there was going to be a girls' basketball game the next night in the next town between our town, Haddonfield, and the other town, Haddon Heights. And so I made sure that we were going. I dragged her there, and we get into the arena, or whatever you call it, the high school gym, the arena, right? And we bound up to the top of the stands, and I say, you know, best seat in the house. And I realize it's the middle of the first quarter. I'm thinking like, well, it's the middle of the first quarter, and you can get the best seat in the house. But we watched, and as we watched, she just sort of went through, I'm doing this, she went through her follow-through watching the girls play, and she decided that she was going to do it. So that this could be with any dad, but certainly for me, that was the realization that this, you know, this sort of existed.
This was 1996, 1997,
yeah.
Something
right.
like that.
Right.
And up until that point, you had considered that your girls, your daughters, were going to follow the path that daughters had long before then.
Or I didn't even think about it.
Right.
Basically, I probably didn't even think about it. You know, certainly we were going to start music lessons, and there was dancing and all this other stuff that you might imagine. But I think that less than thinking about that they were going to do that, I was oblivious to it completely.
You said that you went to the newspaper to quickly find some sort of a local high school girls basketball game.
Yeah, right.
Which brings up this thought, 95% of national sports coverage focuses on male athletes to this day. Is that aggravating?
No, it doesn't bother me, you know, because I've become, you know, there's certain sections in the newspaper, for those who still read the newspaper, that are, you know, not everybody does the crossword puzzle, but those people who do the crossword puzzle couldn't be without it. So kids, parents of people, I remember the sports editor of the Philadelphia Inquirer telling me that, well, why do we spend so much time on high school sports? And I'm thinking like, well, it's not that everybody is reading the high school sports, but those who read it read every line. And so they want to know about what their youth sports are. So that they don't cover, you know, the WNBA is not as important as if they didn't cover girls lacrosse, you know, in high school.
The WNBA, it's been around now for 15, 16 years,
right.
Something like that. Is that a direct result of a change of heart by people like you?
No, I don't think so. I think it's that there's more TV time for sports and it can be allowed on, just like ESPN when it first started doing, you know, the America's Cup. You know, nobody
right.
watched sailing, but suddenly there was space for sailing.
And I just found out that there was 30 hours of curling during the last Winter Olympics on uh-huh. CNBC from Vancouver. But so but it is a happy point to be in history that there is this need out there, for example, for programming,
right.
for entertaining, that we suddenly have as a society more of an acceptance of this line of sports
right.
for females.
But still, mostly what people will watch female sports will be figure skating or Olympic, you know, Olympic kinds of sports. They call them Olympic sports now. They don't like to call them minor sports.
Do you think that there has been some bleed over, if you will, of women into the predominantly male-oriented sports? And I'm thinking, or at least skills, Danica Patrick comes
right.
to mind.
Yeah, that's sort of nice. I mean, because that really is a competition with men. But I know my Ella's, she was a co-captain of the tennis team, and her other co-captain, when she went to Rutgers, decided to play rugby. Now, when I played rugby at Carleton, I can't imagine that girls even thought of doing it. But now, you know, whatever sport, you know, that's just fine.
We're going to find out more about what Ella and Sylvia played in high school and what they remain involved in right now when we continue our discussion with Robert Strauss, author of the book Daddy's Little Gully, here on WFAE and Charlotte Talks right after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Leap Design, a full-service graphic and web design studio in Charlotte's Plaza Midwood, providing individual solutions for brand identity and website development for businesses and organizations. Details at leapdesign.com. Tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, Dr. John Rady has done extensive long-term research about how regular physical activity is not only good for your body, but makes your brain function better and might combat anxiety and depression. Dr. Rady has discovered something he calls Miracle-Gro for the Brain, which is beneficial for everyone, but especially children. We'll find out more about that when Charlotte Talks tomorrow morning at 9 here on 90.7 FM WFAE.
On the next AN Ream show, Saudi Arabia is a key oil producer and ally of the U.S., but its politics complicate the relationship. How the Arab Spring is testing the bond between the two nations.
That's the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show coming up from 10 to noon here on Listener Funded 90.7 FM WFAE.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guest today is Robert Strauss, author of the book Daddy's Little Goalie, about his daughters Sylvia and Ella. Ella, a freshman, just finished her freshman year at Davidson College. Sylvia, still in high school back in Haddonfield, New Jersey, participating in what?
She managed to do five sports in 2 years so far. She's on the tennis team, and she's on the lacrosse team. And she was in basketball freshman year, then she decided to go into indoor track, and she's also the manager of the wrestling team.
If you want to join our discussion, our phone numbers are 704-926-WFAE, that's 704-926-9323, or 1-800-603-9323. Reach us on the internet at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. Your experience, do parents demonstrate, both of our experience is going to be that parents demonstrate some of their worst behavior at their child's sporting event. How do you address that? Is it any different at a girls' sporting event than it is at a boys' sporting event?
No, I mean, I think, yeah, it's sort of unfortunate, but I do my best to try to stay away from those people. And, you know, it's sort of a stereotype that happens. But because I was a journalist and able to work at home, I was able to go to all of these millions of events, and sometimes I was the only parent there. So that, if I wasn't acting up, then no parent was.
You write on one part of the book, it's hard to imagine the chasm that separates 21st century girls' sports from the sports scene of their fathers, unless you look at it through the prism, hazy as it is now, of those fathers' youth. It brings up the question, do you think that there are still barriers that exist today to girls participating in sports?
Only the sort of very small social barriers that might exist in a particular community. But I don't think there's anybody who out there says girls shouldn't play sports. I mean, that's an absurdity, I think, at this point.
Which there was obviously the big legislation that occurred in 1971.
See, in 1971, it actually went into effect, called Title IX.
Title IX.
And it was a more complex financial thing about federal funding. But essentially, it was there to make sure that opportunities were equal for girls and boys in many things, but athletics was the most prominent one.
At that time, you were involved in sports writing, correct?
Well, I was in college then. To the extent I was involved in sports writing, as a school newspaper. But I was the commissioner of the goofball softball league, and we only allowed women to scorekeep. Can you believe that?
Mm.
This is back in the liberal, anti-Vietnam era days. But we weren't even conscientious enough to do that.
But Title IX did have this profound effect.
Oh, huge! I mean, if you look at the high school association puts out the number of kids involved in every sport, and back in that era, I don't remember the exact figures, but it's tenfold now of girls playing sports. I realize it's 40 years, but still, a tenfold increase where boys is only incrementally bigger. Maybe one and a half times as many.
The epiphany, the awakening that you had, do you hope that things like Title IX, yeah, and a change of attitude has really proved to be beneficial to the rest of us?
Yeah. I mean, if I can take Ella as an example, my older daughter, she was the, she stayed with tennis. She was the co-captain of a state championship tennis team. Yet she was the 14th best person on the team. So therefore, she got, it showed that she was able to develop leadership over the time. She was a coxswain and crew. She was recruited for, you know, Division I schools, but she decided to go to Davidson because it was a better school. So she showed perspective. And she was, she won this, all these teams have this coach's award, which is usually for the most inspirational kid. Well, she was a 5'0" shooting guard for the basketball team, probably the smallest kid in all of New Jersey. So it must have showed that she had some moxie. So somehow, in all those years of playing, something good came out of it.
Again, Ella is 19 now.
Right.
Sylvia is 15.
16.
16, excuse me. Turned 16. Ever see your daughters discriminated against because of their gender?
Well, not really, but...
Have you ever witnessed discrimination against other young ladies?
You're talking about vis-a-vis athletics, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Only in the sense that any girl who had even more moxie and played in, say, Little League or in a totally boys sport, they always had to be just a little bit better than the boys, you know, to be accepted. But short of that, I don't know. And you'd see parents of boys rolling their eyes, saying, "Oh, what's this girl doing out here?" kind of thing.
But it's not as quaint as it once was.
Correct.
It is accepted as being a more serious effort when you see 10-year-olds playing in a soccer game and one or two members of the team on both sides of the ball is going to have a girl playing.
Well, you know, that state championship tennis team, the girls played the boys. The boys were quite good. I think they were the South Jersey champs, and the girls beat the boys in tennis. So, you know, no boy is sitting there out there saying, "I better not try because it's a girl."
There's some evidence that show that how we treat girls and boys, even before they start kindergarten, shapes their later sports participation and ability. So you detected it with Ella. Thank goodness that she asked that question, why don't girls play more sports, at age 5? So you had the advantage there.
Yeah, I did. But the thing that I had to do, and this is where the book turns, is I had to figure out what kind of dad I was going to be.
Mm.
And I decided, I guess I'm saying that I would be the dad that was always there, but trying to stay in the background, and trying to always find the good things going on. As my wife calls me, you know, in this era of the tiger mom, I was the pussycat dad. I was always there with like a little pat on the back or something like that.
Fathers and athletic daughters, in fact, share an unusual bond. You agree with that?
Yeah. Well, one of the things about being a dad or being a mom, whatever it is you have to realize that if the normal kid who's 5 wants to be with you. So if I were into opera, say, they'd be going to opera events and maybe they'd become opera singers or opera buffs. Well, you know, I was into sports and they were happy to go with me to whatever event I wanted to go to, and so they became interested in it.
Maybe it's a good time to ask this question. What is your take on what does a sports teach the younger person?
Well, like I said, I think it teaches them, a way to get along with other kids. I mean, that's really sort of the big thing. There was a comment on Amy Chua's book, The Tiger Mother, by a New York Times columnist, David Brooks, and he said, you know, kids should be on a team or should go to a sleepover because then they have to figure out how to get along with everybody else. And I think that the big thing about girls being involved in this is the residue is that they can be leaders or followers or whatever they decide they want to be, but at least they've had the context to be that way.
What are the advantages that a father might bring to his daughter's sports experience?
Well, if they're at all sanguine, they can bring their failures. You know, one of my favorite moments that I point out in the book is that Sylvia was, my younger one, was maybe 10, and she was on one of these super-duper teams, you know, how they have travel teams and they have beyond travel, and you go off to someplace and play a tournament. Anyway, so she was playing in this game, and after the game I go over and I put my arm around her and I say, well, you know, I want to congratulate you for being the high scorer in the game. I said, unfortunately, it was with 1 point. And so they had made the mistake of fouling her. She was lofting up the halftime buzzer beater. She made one from the foul line, and they lost 44-1. So we still laugh about it. And that's what you have to impart to your kids, is that most of the times, what you're going to remember long-term is these sort of goofball, funny moments.
Should this be a surprise to anyone? I mean, I'm certain that there are millions of dads that have come before you and I, that with dads of daughters that have had these same sort of epiphanies or awakenings, as I keep calling them.
Well, I hope they have the awakening that I just mentioned, and that's the humor part of it. Because what they may have only is the same thing as, like, wishing that game was 44-38 and they scored 25 points, you know, which is, in a sense, not as memorable as being the one who had the 1 point, you know, and it was just sort of a funny, silly moment.
We have a tweet that says, I played on an all-girls team starting at age 4 in 1989, so this concept is not new to girls of the 90s. And that's not what you've been saying.
No. I don't mean that it's new to the 90s, but there was a time, whenever the time started, which was clearly before my time, but not incredibly before my time as a parent, when that sort of whole social aspect of soccer teams and t-ball teams started. So I certainly wouldn't say that 1989 was that time, but maybe it was 1980 or some point.
Sometime after 1971.
Yeah, after 1971.
When it started becoming a federal mandate, if you will, that that the girls' sports receive as equal a treatment as possible as the boys' sports were doing. An email listener wrote in and said, the girls in sports stereotype still seems alive and well. My young son and his friends still comment about how girls aren't as good at sports as boys. And I've even heard some of the kids say things like, you throw like a girl.
Right.
How can we get beyond those stereotypes?
Well, they can look at Sean Marion's jump shot in the NBA Finals here and see a boy who shoots like a girl. So you just have to sort of, I think you have to ignore that in it. That's the best way of facing it, is ignoring it, because the best girl athletes, sure, they're not going to be as good as the best boy athletes, but it's all in milieu. I mean, the high school play isn't as good as something on Broadway.
The book has been described by so many folks as being just this poignant memoir about parenting more than sports. What's your most poignant moment or memory with Ella and Sylvia?
Okay, well, beyond the two that I might have mentioned, there's of Ella being 5 years old and curling up with me. I think, in a certain sense, the last Ella ended up her basketball season having an injury, had to have an operation. So the last season she became the manager, and she would film the games, and I remember, like, normally I'd be watching on one side, and then I saw her filming and I thought, well, now this is the time, you know. So we spent, and I went back over and we filmed the games together. And when she really did have the operation, I had to run over and get the batteries. And so we spent our time together. Well, the team was rather good and made it to the state semifinals and lost in that game. And I'm driving back home, and we're discussing the game through the Jersey Pines, and it's pretty dark there. And you know, she knew that when she was getting home, her boyfriend would be there and Sylvia would be there, and they'd be watching some TV show. So she decided to take a nap. Like, we're done discussing the game, as we had discussed game after game after game for years and years and years. And then a tear sort of rolled down my eye, and I realized this was the last game. Last game ever, last event, last swimming, last diving, last all these lasts, but this was really the last. So this compendium of times together was ending, and so that made me feel a little teary, and apparently it did It did to her, too.
And it does to this day. A funny aside to that story that you tell about her being relegated to the role of videotaping the game as opposed to participating in the game because the surgery precluding that, was that you two guys were then discussing strategy, which you figured out in the post-mortem, if you will, that the coach would be hearing what you guys were talking about in the conversation because the videotape was
It was up, but we never shirked that, and he never said anything to us to shut up.
there is one good point to be made here, and that is a fairly good testament to the fact that that possibly women's sports has arrived, and that is the interest by corporate America.
That's true. There are especially, you have the race car drivers, and that's really big deal corporate America. But I guess Mia Hamm still has her clothing line, and certainly she has camps that are supervised by her. I don't know that there's yet a Brandi Chastain fast food restaurant, but there's certainly that.
Did you, in researching the book, for example, or have you read about the relationship between, like, Danica Patrick and her father, or Venus Williams and her sister and their dad?
Not really. I mean, although, you read various stories in the newspaper in passing, but I didn't intend for this to be a research book in that regard, so I didn't use that as an example.
And you did intend it, however, to be as much about parenting as about making a case for young ladies in sports.
Sports, yeah. One of the kinds of things that I think about is that if your kid's in the play, maybe they have three plays a year, and maybe there's three or four performances of the play. Well, that's not even half of a lacrosse season. That's not, in our town, that's not even a third of a tennis season. So I was at, as I say in the book, like a bajillion events with my kids. And I got to see them do well and poorly. If they did poorly one day, they did well the next day. It was and still, at least with Sylvia, still a time to sort of be together with not judgmental. I mean, then that gives you the dialogue to talk about things that are important later. They're not afraid to talk to you about, so-and-so's goal. And so suddenly they're not afraid to talk to you about school or boyfriends or whatever else there is.
40 years after Title IX, the climate is definitely much better, much more conducive to these sort of pursuits. You agree?
I think so. And, hopefully dads and daughters will have a better time relating to each other.
That's the author of the book, Daddy's Little Goalie, Robert Strauss. Our discussion with him will continue in just a moment.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Microban International, committed to antimicrobial protection that keeps over 1,000 products cleaner, from cutting boards to wallboard, through a broad portfolio of antimicrobial technologies. More information at www.microban.com. And Michael Lobiondo Photography, creating images for corporations and publications for more than 20 years in Charlotte and around the world at mlobiondo.com. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the U.S., Saudi Arabia, and the Arab Spring. Saudi Arabia is a key oil producer and ally of the U.S., but its politics complicate the relationship. How the Arab Spring is testing the bond between the two nations on the Diane Rehm Show this morning at 10 on 90.7 FM WFAE. You can call Charlotte Talks now by dialing 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, or go to WFAE.org. Last year, WFAE's June Fun Drive lasted 3 days. This year, we're trying something different, a one-day fun drive. It's this Thursday, June 9th. This means more programming and less fundraising. Will it work? With your help, we believe it will. You can pledge right now at WFAE.org or make sure you call in a pledge this Thursday and enter to win a Caribbean cruise.
We're back on Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guest today is Robert Strauss, author of the book Daddy's Little Goalie. I do want to mention right here that you have a book signing tomorrow at Park Road Books from 6 until 7 p.m. Folks can join you there and get an autographed copy of your book. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
An email from Allison. My father always encouraged sports for me because he said it was a great way for girls to learn how to work together and to compete with each other in a positive way, since sometimes for girls it's hard to relate to each other in that sense. What does the author think about the relationship on his daughter's teams versus what he's seen in her sports writing career?
Maybe not so much the sports writing career, but I would say with boys, the girls are, I hate to do stereotypes, but it's true. It's true that I've seen is that girls are less inclusive in general. Girls, boys, if some other boy comes along, he's part of the group. It's more, more is better. Girls, sort of less is better, and it's seemingly. And so when girls get on teams, they're suddenly friends. And maybe what was wonderful for my kids being in sport a season is that by the time they got bored with those people, they were onto the next group of kids they could do.
There are a lot of anecdotal information out there about the true benefits of boys and girls participating in sports, but one in particular caught my eye. High school female athletes are less likely to use tobacco than non-athletes.
Yeah, and also, I also have read that they're less likely to have negative sexual encounters. They're less likely to, I can't believe that they're less likely or more likely to drink, but perhaps that's the same way, or less likely in any case to abuse whatever the various negative things are.
Well, I mean, that's sort of one thing that is required, sports, regardless of the gender, is discipline.
Yeah. That's true. I did notice that when Sylvia quit basketball last year, before she started lacrosse, she was still the manager. She was also the manager of the freshman team. That was the only time I've ever seen in her time where grades mattered, where her grades were not as good. So somehow I sort of believe that the discipline involved in actually being in sports actually sort of made the rest of their lives more disciplined.
Have any of your friends, fathers, dads of sons, for example, said, oh, my gosh, I never knew that it was going to be or it could be that way for dads of daughters?
I think that implicitly that's true. But of course, since they started so early, I do remember one soccer team that Sylvia was on where all of the girls were either in all-girl families or families, and the rest of them were families where the firstborn was a girl. So all those dads sort of had to come up with that epiphany of what am I going to do as a dad?
We've said before the book is as much about parenting as it is about sports and participation by young ladies in sports. Could you read an excerpt from your book?
Okay, here's one you liked. I don't believe that sports is necessarily the only venue for a daddy-daughter relationship or even the best venue. It was just our venue. It gave us something to be together at, to talk about, to laugh about. Sports gave my kids a place to be and friends to be there with. But so would an orchestra or dance or my wife's vaunted Model UN. The bigger difference, I suppose, is there are only a few orchestra or dance concerts, but there are a bazillion, jillion, quadrillion sporting events. The girls and I were together with each other more than Romulus and Remus, Steve and Edie, and it brought us closer.
Was there anything else that could have brought you closer, you think?
Well, anything could have, but this is what did. And like I said, because there are so many events, and I chose to be at all of them. And I have to say they weren't upset at me being there because I would always get the call 20 minutes before, got to bring a snack, got to remember my socks. When I got to the games, the girls, especially tennis, there was this one girl at tennis that, since I wanted to be at the thing, but I would find a place to park my car so I'd be unobtrusive and be sitting in the car watching the girls, they called the game Where's Robert, because they knew I'd be there, but they wouldn't know exactly where I was.
There have been other authors who have written about girls raising athletic daughters, that sort of thing. That include the extreme sport competition, involvement in the extreme sports, problem girls may have in sports, from injury to eating disorders, that sort of thing. What can parents do to help their daughters get involved and stay involved in the girls' sports program, other than just reading your book?
I have a friend, Mike Sokolov, who writes for the New York Times Magazine mostly, and he wrote a book called Warrior Girls, which he believes is sort of an epidemic of girls' injuries. And, it's a good read for people when their kids get into sports. And there is a different physiology and maybe psychology of girls in sports. But I would say still, since his is the physical and mine is sort of the mental aspect of this, I still think having a good humor about it, is the best way to do it, because you get sports is a place where parents get too hyped up. They got to sort of lay back and look for that funny moment.
And again, it's truly no different, though, with the daughters as it is with the sons.
Well, I would say parents of boys should do that too, and they probably have less, because of the sex stereotype, it's probably that way. I would prefer to think that they could also remember those moments, but most of the time, I still don't hear that enough.
There are an awful lot of statistics out there that that are backing up the true benefits of having so many more opportunities for young ladies to participate in sports nowadays. In 1970, 1 in 27 girls participated in high school sports. Today, that ratio is 1 in 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to warm your heart.
Yes, we happen to live in this crazy sports town. It's a small town. It's an old town. It's colonial, back to 1680s, and very intense about everything. And the last 2 years, the high school has won 7 state championships.
Oh,
in other words, 14 championships in 2 years in their group. They do it by groups there, and half of them are boys and half of them are girls. And each one of them gets to ride in the fire truck downtown. So there is this sort of intense, though homey, atmosphere about it,
which is not unlike any other small town in America,
exactly.
Quite frankly.
Except we've somehow been that successful.
Let's go to the phone lines here. And again, if you want to join our discussion with Robert Strauss, author of the book Daddy's Little Gully, our numbers are 704-926-9323, 1-800-603-9323, or on the web at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. John from Charlotte is calling in. John, thanks so much for your call.
Oh, hello. Love the show because it's dear to my heart. Back in 1969, I was a freshman in college. I was one of the first freshmen allowed to wrestle in varsity sports. 3 years ago, I started coaching wrestling. And my eldest daughter was my manager. Well, she fell in love with sport. The next year, my younger daughter was my manager. Now they both wrestle.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's definitely a boy's sport, but, this has done a world of good for their self-confidence and awareness of their body health, and even their grades have gone up. My eldest made it to the regionals in her freshman year. She's one of 11 girls in the state who made it to regionals. They do everything off the mat that other girls do, but on the mat, the wrestlers, and I just think it's incredible what sports do for the girls.
What do you think, John, inspired them to pursue?
Being managers, they just fell in love with watching the sport and wanted to participate, and they love beating up on boys.
Hey, I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
They just love the sport. They love to get out there and compete.
Well,
and it's one of the toughest sports there is.
I know. Well, I told you, Sylvia's the wrestling manager now, in addition to all of her other sort of athletic pursuits. And but I don't think, I don't envision her getting on the mat itself.
No? No. Why not?
No. How old are the daughters, John?
We've got one who's 11. She's on my middle school team, and there's one on, she's going to be 15. She's on the high school team.
A 1996 study confirmed a link between girls' involvement in high school sports and higher science grades and test scores. Have you seen any evidence of that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. These, as I said, their grades have gone up. In fact, even one of the boys on the team, he was struggling all year long, and also he started wrestling, his grades shot up.
Yeah.
Oh, the one, the eldest is in honor science, and the youngest started to get a grade in math.
Well, maybe they can go to Davidson.
Yeah, well, we're going up to Davidson for a wrestling clinic this month, actually.
Yeah. I always want to give a shout-out to the school.
Yeah.
Sorry?
I wanted to give a shout-out to the school because Ella goes there, that's all.
Yeah, why not?
John, your advice to other parents who to be more receptive to this whole concept?
Let them try it. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
John,
we were somewhat against it, and they just love it. Let them do what they need to do. You know, they're not just girls; they are people.
John, thanks so much for your phone call.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, take care now. What does that do when you hear something like? I mean, it's not surprising now.
No, it's not at all. And you know what? What I like, especially now that Ella's sort of done her competitive sports career, is that she's become sort of the workout queen. She always takes the hard spinning class. She makes sure that she joins gyms when she is wherever she is. So, you know, if you're at five and you set a goal, I mean, if your kid's at five and you set a goal for them, wouldn't that be one of them?
Sylvia is still involved in high school sports, back in Haddonfield.
Right.
Which ones?
She's on the tennis team and the lacrosse team, and she runs, sort of indoor track to stay in shape. And she's on the summer lacrosse team. And on Father's Day, of all places, I'm going to be in Maryland at some huge lacrosse tournament. And what better way to spend Father's Day than with your kid?
And Ella is involved in Davidson in...
She's like I said, she's sort of the workout queen there. Being a small school, there's plenty of gym facilities available, step machines or, you know, classes or anything like that.
Do you think that something like this was inevitable without a mandate like Title IX?
I sort of think that most things have to start with a mass sort of protest. And I suspect that there was this mass protest of women's rights through the 60s, and one of the residues was not about voting or jobs, but was also about athletics. So I think there sort of had to be, maybe there didn't have to be a federal mandate, but there had to be sort of an uprising to get more consciousness about this sort of thing.
Ella and Sylvia both are, in fact, teaching younger girls.
Yes, yeah, they both... Sylvia even taught golf last year, and she never golfed before because her tennis coach... you know, got her to do that as well in the classes. And Ella once coached Sylvia's basketball team to an undefeated season in some summer league. So yeah, they both do that.
Now, and to clarify here, they're obviously at 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. You can have some co-ed sports participation, both boys and girls on the same team. But that's not what you're advocating here a little bit later on in life when they become teenagers.
I don't think you should avoid it per se, but it's sort of unnecessary in that regard.
From Beth, email this just in: my husband and daughters hike, raft, hunt, camp, all the boys' things. The girls play basketball, soccer, and one will begin field hockey in the fall. I love that they're not pigeonholed into girly things, and they have this great time with their dad. The return on this investment is priceless, and I have time for a pedicure. I did want to get your – how does your wife react to the fact that you are so involved with the daughters?
Well, you know, she's sort of funny about that because she – she doesn't mind going to the events, but she, I think, sees that this has been, you know, really good thing, a nice thing, and something that she didn't have to do, which helped out.
Again, with the book being so much about parenting, is there one huge takeaway, something that you would advise if you could only have 15 to 30 seconds with somebody, what would you tell them about this?
Do as much as you can to smile. You know, to not grimace when your kid does something wrong. I mean, you wouldn't, if they were in the play and they blew the line, you wouldn't run up on the stage and, you know, shake them by the collar. You really have to sort of stand back and remember that the times that when you're going to talk about this at the party, when, you know, at your 80th birthday party, you're going to remember those fun times, not the serious ones.
And we're seeing more coverage of women's sports in the newspapers. That's a good thing, eh?
I think so. It can't hurt.
Robert Strauss, author of the book Daddy's Little Goalie. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us on listener-funded public radio, WFAE. I'm Chris Plackham. I've been sitting in for Mike Collins, and thanks for listening.